which cause some problems. Apply some of the Buddhist principles to it so you can have a more peaceful and happy life. Because when you are peaceful and happy, and you don't have many problems, that means that my life is more peaceful too, and I don't have to spend so many times talking to you. I like a peaceful life. So, what I'm going to talk about this evening is blame. And why is it that people always get into the, what I think is a very unhealthy habit of blaming others for the suffering we have to experience in life? We always say, it's my father's fault, it's my mother's fault, it's my wife's fault, my husband's fault, my kid's fault, my monk's fault, the government's fault. It's always somebody's fault. And because the people always try to solve the unhappiness in their mind, in their life, by blaming other people, it creates even more problems, and also it doesn't help anybody. So I was taught when I was a young monk, it's a waste of time blaming others. Instead, I was taught that blaming others, I haven't said it for a long time here, blaming others is like having an itch on your bum and scratching your head. That was Ajahn Chah. Very down to earth. Some you can remember, and it's so accurate. Because if you have an itch on your bottom and you scratch your head, does the itch ever go away? No. You get two itches, where once you only had one. So blaming other people for your suffering just creates more suffering in the other person. So it doesn't go away when you blame others. So if you have an itch on your bottom, where should you scratch? On your bottom. In other words, where is the suffering and the problem? It's not in the other person, it's in you. So never try to solve the problems in your life by controlling others or other people's behavior. You'll find it just gets worse. So instead, see if something has gone wrong in your life and you want to blame somebody else. Instead, how about putting your attention where the problem is inside of you? And soon you find out that this is par for the course, in most cases. So you don't blame the dog for barking, because that is what dogs do. You don't blame Ajahn Brahm for telling bad jokes, because that is what I do. Which is the introduction to today's joke. An Englishman, a Scotsman, a Welshman, and an Australian were in a pub. Unfortunately, all jokes have to start in pubs. I don't know why, but that's tradition, and I do. I'm a traditional monk. And the Englishman said, today the drinks are on me, because my wife has just given birth to my first child, a son. And because today is St. George's Day, we decided to name our son George. And as Scotsman said, wow, that is such a coincidence. Because my first son was born on St. Andrew's Day, said the Scotsman. And so I named my son Andrew. Wow, said the Irishman. You wouldn't believe this, but my first child, a son, was born on St. Patrick's Day. Therefore I called it St. Patrick. Paddy. And then the Australian, this is where I get into trouble, don't blame me. The Australian said, wow, that is such a coincidence. My first child was born on Anzac Day, so I called him Biscuit. Now, for those of you listening overseas, you may not understand, connect to Anzac and biscuit. Anzac Day is coming soon. And Anzac biscuit, they go together. That's one of the things we have to eat on Anzac Day. So anyway, that's a bad joke, but here, there it was. So please don't blame me. Instead, if you don't like it, just loosen up a bit. But so often when things go wrong, we always want to blame somebody else for the suffering which is inside our own heart. You've got typical things like relationships. Why is it that when things go wrong in a relationship, we always tend to blame our partner? It's not their fault. This is what happens in life. The next time you actually, I did a marriage this afternoon, you should actually look in the marriage license when you get married. You can see a little clause on the bottom there. So, this marriage has an expiry date. It has a use-by date. Like everything else, things don't last. As, where has she gone now? Ronnie's having a hair shave. She disappeared. Oh, there she is. She will know tomorrow. You know, hair doesn't last. That's why we get the saying, hair today, gone tomorrow. I had to put that one in there. That's a terrible pun. Hair today, gone tomorrow. Because that's true. It is going tomorrow. She's shaving her hair off. But why do we blame people or things for what is a natural occurrence? Yeah, we just try to keep things going, but sometimes things don't last. So it's nobody's fault. It's just life. Once we understand what life can give us, we understand its limitations. And we learn to live within those limitations of life, then we find no one is to blame. This is our life. Recently, it's actually just a few days ago, I'm not sure if they're here today, but there was, it's always very sad occasions, a young boy passed away, only 11 years of age, had an aneurysm. Who's to blame? Another young man jumped off a 9-story building. I think his funeral was this afternoon. Who is to blame? Sometimes we always feel that someone needs to be punished or someone needs to be blamed. This shouldn't happen. Why? And on the cases of young people passing away, what we call these days premature deaths, at the funeral service I told a story of this monk I knew who lived in the north of Thailand many, many years ago. And this monk was a very simple forest monk who lived in a hut in the jungle, in the forest, up in the mountains, made of thatch roof and bamboo walls. Very simple, but didn't give you much protection. So one evening when there was a very heavy storm in the forest, when the winds were very strong, first of all branches came crashing down on the forest floor, and also some trees as well. Many of you here may have seen the photographs from Cyclone Debbie up in Queensland, and just how much destruction heavy winds create. So imagine living in a forest with not a cyclone but a heavy storm, and how dangerous that is when you have no protection at all, just thatch on your roof. So he was meditating, he was awake all night, hearing these very strong thuds. I always do this when I give a talk, because by the first 5 or 10 minutes, people start falling asleep. So when I do crash, it keeps people awake. So if ever you're a lecturer at university or at school, please learn how to keep people... Attention! And make the kids laugh as well. So, crashing down onto the ground, but he obviously survived, otherwise he would not be alive to tell me the story. And he said that in the early morning he got out of his hut to look at the damage He survived. And when he looked at the diamond, he did find how lucky he was. He just escaped some very heavy branches, just missed his very fragile dwelling. But, he said, it wasn't the tree trunks and the heavy branches which took his attention. What he was interested in was the leaves which had been torn off from the tree the night before and lay dead on the forest floor. Because most of those leaves were old brown leaves. Amongst those many brown leaves, he saw several yellow leaves, even some green leaves, fewer in number than the yellow leaves. And amongst those green leaves, he saw some leaves which are that special fresh green colour, which told him they could have only sprouted the day before. They too had been torn off by the storm and lay dead on the forest floor. And then he looked up at the trees to see what had been left by the storm. As you would expect, most of the leaves which are up on the twigs and branches, still alive and healthy, were the green leaves. But even though many green leaves and some fresh green leaves had been torn off and lay dead on the ground, there were still so many old brown leaves curled up but still hanging on to the tree of life, even though young green leaves lay dead. And he realized there was no mistake made by the wind. It wasn't someone you could blame why young green leaves lay dead and old brown leaves still were clinging on. He said, this is just the nature of storms going through a forest. It always happens like this. And that's where he made the connection, which I hope you have made already. It answers the question, why is it that sometimes young children die, only 11 years of age? And it's some of the people who come here 70, 80, 90 years of age, and they're still clinging on to the tree. And you understand why. Welcome to the nature of life. Nothing has gone wrong. When we understand the laws of nature, then of course there's no one to blame. And that takes away, number one, a lot of the suffering, and it puts us, instead of blaming other people, to learn that our suffering, our misunderstanding, is just because we don't understand what life can give us. We're fighting against something which we can never get. And the same when somebody does commit suicide. Why do they do that? And how many times is it that somebody tries to blame themselves? I should have been there for them. I should have been kinder to them. It's impossible. There was one gentleman who used to come to our Buddhist society many years ago. He taught me a lot. Because when he first came, this was when we were in our little center in North Perth, he was a pest exterminator. And he knocked on the door of our Buddhist society asking if we want anything eradicated, any pests killed. And it was my fellow monk, Ajahn Chacko, answered the door, said, no, we're Buddhists, we don't exterminate pests, we learn how to live with them. Because I often notice if you start exterminating pests, you start off with cockroaches and then you go up to mice and then you go up to your husband or your wife or something. Thinking that's the best way to deal with problems, exterminate them. And so he said, no, we don't do that. So why not? And so they started a conversation. This guy got really interested. And he started becoming a regular member. You know, come to meditate and also coming to do some, listen to some teachings. But unfortunately, this gentleman, one day, he was fixing up some plumbing on his roof and he fell off the roof. And he hit his head. This was 30 years ago. So maybe the doctors weren't as smart as they are today, because he went crazy. He literally started dressing up as Elvis Presley and pretending he was Elvis. And he had psychotic episodes. And his wife could not really control him, but for some reason I could. So I was his savior. Every time he had an episode, his wife would ring me up, I'd call him and I'd calm him down. I could do that. He had a trust in me, which other people, he didn't have a trust in at all. But unfortunately, one day, his wife called, and I was down with the flu. I had a very, very, very terrible flu. Actually, I used to take all the flu injections, and I'd always get flu, and I sort of gave up taking them. I haven't had flu since. That is not an advice to give up vaccination. I'll be in big trouble with the government for that. But just personal, I don't know why this happens. Weird monk. But anyway, I was down with the flu, in bed, couldn't do anything, and I got the call from his wife. He needs your help. He's having an episode. And those of you who've had flu, you know, you can't even look after yourself, let alone look after other people. And so I said, I can't. And a couple of hours later, he killed himself. Did I feel guilty or blame myself? How could you? There was no possibility I could do anything. I was really, really sick. But if I hadn't had that training as a monk, I could so easily blame myself, as many people still do. Something went wrong, and you think, well, I could have. Maybe if I'd have done this, maybe if I'd have done that. But I never get into ifs, because that's where you start blaming. If I could have done something else, if I hadn't been there, if I'd have taken a different turn. There is a word which I heard, a religious word, which was supposed to describe some supreme being. Whenever you ask any religious person, what is God, what is the meaning of this universe, they would say a word called ineffable. If any of you have been into spiritualism or God stuff, you probably heard that word, ineffable. And I never understood what it meant. What do you mean you can't eff something? That's what ineffable means. I don't think it means that. Those of you who have got a bad state of mind, you can't eff this and eff that. So I changed the word to ineffable. You can't if the past. And that made a lot of sense to me. Because the past is ineffable. You can't if the past. Which means you can't say, oh, if only I didn't become a monk. If only if I didn't become a monk, then I would not have to work so hard. I've been just working my butt off the last week. I don't know why my butt is so fat. I've been working it off so much. My nose has been to the grindstone. It should be really worn out by now. But if I only hadn't joined this group, if I only hadn't done this, if I only hadn't married that woman, if only I didn't have that kid, if only I'd have won the lottery, just one more number, if only, then I'd be out of here. Apparently that's an advertisement, isn't it? One more lottery number and I'm out of here or something. I don't know what you get out of, but anyway. You can't if the past. The past is finished, and even if you did win the lottery, what would have happened? I remember reading that story, the person who won the lottery and a few weeks later was in jail. It made him crazy. Why do you do that? Well, I remember this story of this guy apparently over in Chiang Mai, in north of Thailand. They have illegal lotteries there. I think it's the last two or three numbers, and they bet on it. And he won it. And a lot of money. I think he actually sold his house and put a fortune on this lottery number. And because it was run by the gangs in Chiang Mai, they said, oh, we're not going to pay you the full amount, you know, just a couple of million is enough. He said, no, it's 10 million. He said, oh, a couple of million. And they said, no, we're only going to give you 2 million. He said, no, I demand 10 million. He couldn't take them to court because it's a legal lottery. And they told him, listen, mate, a bullet only cost about $10. But he still wouldn't accept it. And he went crazy. Committed to a mental institution. simply because he won and couldn't accept a lesser payment. Greed sent him mad. So sometimes, if only he hadn't have won, you'd have been much happier. Is that the case? You never know. The past is so uncertain. If you turned left instead of turning right, what would have happened? Who knows? It could have been much worse. I always tell that to people with marriage problems. They say, if only I hadn't married that man, I'd be happy. No. If you hadn't married that man, you probably married somebody much worse. You don't know, do you? You can't tell. So, cut your losses and don't if the past. So you can't blame yourself. So many times that, why do people blame themselves? The problem is not inside of somebody else, it's inside of you, not understanding that, you know, blaming doesn't help anybody. Blaming, instead of blaming, we acknowledge and we learn from what happened. No blame. Blaming is just punishment. It's a type of criticism. Yes, we have to criticize people, but I liked when I went to a conference over in London many years ago. I get invited to great conferences. This was a human resources conference, the biggest human resource conference in Europe. And they paid all my fares and beautiful hotel all the way to London for this conference. And when I came back, I obviously was a success there. As soon as I arrived back here in Perth, one of the people who went there was from the National Health Service in Britain. And they said, we like what you say, can you come and give a keynote address at our conference in Birmingham, in London? They were going to pay my fares over there again. And I wrote back to them and said, I'm surprised at you bunch of hypocrites. You call yourself the National Health Service. I've just come back after a long flight. And if I accepted your offer and flew back to London again all the way from Perth, you would make me so sick. And you call yourself health providers? So I refused. And I got the message. But anyway, at those conferences, you also learn a lot. And people were talking about performance assessment. So this is, instead of blaming somebody, performance assessment. How did you do, you know, with your marriage? Give your husband a performance assessment. But learn how to do it properly. And in a performance assessment, you don't go slagging a person and blaming a person. Now, I learned this in psychology when I was interested in it. Very, very clear example. This is the reason I tell it in stories, because you can remember this. And remember this, why do I make this mistake again and again? Probably said this last week, I can't remember, but it was the two children in the supermarket checkout. Parallel aisles. One child dropped a jar of honey. Smash! On the floor. Almost exactly the same time, parallel aisle in the supermarket, another child dropped a carton of milk. Smash, all over the floor, made a big mess. The mother of the child who dropped the honey said, "You stupid boy." And the mother of the child who dropped the milk said, "That was a stupid thing you did." The first is called blaming. The second is performance assessment. It was a stupid thing you did, but you're not a stupid child. And how often is it that we blame somebody and it is like saying, "You're stupid. You know, you're just so insensitive, wife. You know, you're just so arrogant, monk." Yeah, sometimes you're arrogant. A lot of times you're not arrogant. Sometimes you do stupid things. Sometimes you do wise things, but you cannot say a person is stupid. You cannot call them conceited. We just do stupid things from time to time. So performance assessment, this is part of basic Buddhist teachings. You never criticize the person or blame the person. You blame the act if you're going to blame anything. Stupid thing you did, but it doesn't mean you're a stupid person. It's an incompetent act. But you're not an incompetent person. You crashed into a police car, you're a stupid driver, but you know, you're not incompetent. So sometimes, somebody's laughing over there. Good look, we have problems here with parking. And so I was telling people we have our Thai New Year next year. We had the rangers here to make sure the parking was done properly. And you know what, I don't mind saying, it was a Thai woman for the Thai New Year. She parked, we told everyone, park sensibly. And so she parked right in front of the ranger's car so the ranger couldn't get out. But she wasn't a stupid person. It was just a damn stupid thing she did. So, where we give performance assessment, just the act, not another person. So, blaming a person. Sometimes when you get blamed, do you actually feel that, you know, it's like people are just diminishing you? You're a stupid person, you're hopeless, and you feel afterwards that you've actually almost had your competence destroyed? You feel like nothing, worthless? We're talking, I think, earlier about, she was saying about, oh no, that was actually in the wedding this afternoon I did. So far this week I've done one wedding and a funeral. I just need to do another couple of weddings and then I'm a movie. So, at the wedding we're talking about sort of how perfect each other is. Did I say this last week? I think I probably did. About the t-shirt. I get a lot of my wisdom. Now, so where do you get wisdom from anyway? Is it in books, or are you taught this in old teachings of the Buddha, in ancient scriptures, or do just insights just come to you? You know, a lot of the great insights come from t-shirts. And also from cartoons, those two places. So the t-shirt was, I saw it here in Australia, it starts off with, nobody's perfect. That's true, isn't it? You understand that nobody's perfect. That's so easy to accept. And the second line was, I am a nobody. And that's most of you, you know, you can say that, I'm a nobody. And so, nobody's perfect, I'm a nobody, therefore I am perfect. That's logic. That's philosophy. That's reason. So if you're a nobody, welcome, you're perfect. So stop trying to be a somebody. You get in lots of trouble. I am too well known these days. And that causes huge amounts of problems for me. Well, for example, I just come back from Hong Kong. And I just give this talk in the same place where this incident happened many, many years ago. I hope I didn't say this last week, probably did. You see, I'm not perfect either. I repeat myself. I was giving a talk, a couple of hours, lots of people. And after the end of the talk, people wanted to ask you their personal questions, like you do here. And after the personal questions, I think I did give this talk here, yeah, I did. Oh, it's too late now, I started again. I think I remembered I did tell this story. And anyway, after the talk, signing books, photographs, out of the photographs, I really wanted to go to the toilet. And that was the time I finally got to the toilet, after about an hour after finishing my talk. And as soon as I got into the toilet, this man was just finishing washing his hands. And he looked at me and said, Ajahn Brahm, I hadn't got into the toilet cubicle yet. I was just passing. I could see it. It was right in front of me. It was so close. Ajahn Brahm, I need to ask you some questions about my meditation, he said. Another 15 minutes before I can go into the toilet. That is my life now. So please, be a nobody. And then you can go to the toilet straight away without anybody stopping you. That's happened not once, many times. Even in Changi Airport. In Changi Airport, I was a flight from San Francisco, coming back to Perth. Transiting in Singapore Airport. And I know enough people actually work in Singapore Airlines. They were inside to meet me. And I prefer to be quiet. But they said, no, come on. We need to talk to you about some Dhamma. Inside on transit, and I needed a rest. And I thought, how can I escape from these people? You can't just say, shut up. You know, these are the people without whom this Buddhist society wouldn't be here. These main donors. You like to say that. So I use the trick. I need to go to the toilet. So they let me go. That's why we called it the restroom. You get a rest from you guys. So I went to the toilet. And what happened? If you've ever been to like the airport in Singapore, every toilet has an attendant, always there. And I went in there, even the toilet attendant knew me. Ajahn Brahm, I need to ask you some questions about Buddhism. Even the toilet attendant didn't let me go. So actually, if the toilet attendant knows who you are, then I think that qualifies as being well known. So anyway, I have an opportunity of blaming and getting critical. All I have is just let it be. Because instead of blaming yourself or blaming other people for the difficulties and sufferings of life, instead, I was taught by the great Ajahn Chah, regard them not as problems, but as teachers. When we used to go to him to say, please, can we get some mosquito repellent? He would say, no. Can we get some mosquito screens? No. Mosquito coils? No. He knew we couldn't swat them. So did the mosquitoes. No, we can't swat them. That is the trouble in Thailand. Over here, it's okay. But in places like Thailand and Sri Lanka, Buddhist monks have been there for centuries. So every time, it's like genetic, it's evolution. Those mosquitoes over in Thailand and Sri Lanka, now if they see a brown robe, it's a safe dinner. And they take advantage. As soon as they see a brown robe, bald head, okay guys, don't have to worry about anything. We can eat without being swatted. See you guys. They don't know where they're going to eat and get to even the second course before being swatted. So they really take advantage of it. It's really unfair. We're compassionate to them. Are they compassionate to us? No. I remember many times if you've been over there, we can't swat them even if they wanted to. So what you try to do is just flick them away. Just flick them very gently. You know what those what mosquitoes did? I was always going to say something bad. Get into trouble for it again. They just go up a little bit and they go down again. So you didn't even flick them. So okay, take whatever you want. I don't mind. You feed me, so I feed mosquitoes. Fair. So take whatever you want. You know what the bloody mosquitoes would do? They do like exploratory drill here first of all. Now that wasn't tasty, so they'd make a few steps and do another one and another one. Totally taking advantage of my compassion and my harmlessness. Really unforgivable. So what we did, we asked our church, please, can we get something to keep them off? And he said, no. And he said, from now on, he told me, you should call those mosquitoes your teacher. They became Ajahn Mosquito. And that monk was just so incredibly wise. He saw things in a different way than most people did. And it worked. Because you learn so much from Ajahn Mosquito. What I learned from them, the more you worry about them, the more agitated you get from mosquitoes, the more they bite you. I only found out later on why. It's because mosquitoes are attracted to carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. The higher your metabolism, the more the carbon dioxide is emitted from your skin, the more they know you're there. If you just relax and calm down, be peaceful, you become more invisible to the mozzies. They taught me not to be anxious, not to be afraid, just to relax. And the more I relax, I like saying that word, relax, the less mosquitoes bit me. That was much better than mosquito repellent. because that taught me just how to get rid of agitation and anxiety. So I never blame the mosquitoes anymore. Thank you, very mosquitoes. You taught me so much. But, you know, I've learnt enough now, so stop biting me. Enough. So this is actually where we learn not to blame things which irritate us, but to learn from them. So, if you've got a kid who's driving you crazy, Ajahn, kid, you are my teacher. And so many parents have told me they have learned so much from raising children, simply because they have to. They can't escape, and they can't swat children, just like I couldn't swat mosquitoes anymore. Yeah, you want to sometimes, but little monsters. But that's actually, there's a reason why children are very hard to look after these days. I said this when I was giving a talk over in Hong Kong, because I was, you know, saying, why is it, you know, so many problems with modern youth, so disrespectful? You know why? It is because in Buddhism we understand about rebirth, reincarnation. Your children today were the elderly people maybe 20, 30 years ago. Because you didn't look after the elderly people, you just put them in homes and hardly ever visited them. Now they've come back to take their revenge. Yeah, there may be something to that, you know. So that's why I always say that, you know, look at things in a different way. Look after the elderly people in this world. Look after them. Visit your grandparents, your elderly people. Care for them. Take them out. Don't just dump them, because they'll come back to you in the next life. And actually, why do our governments not invest money in care of the elderly? It is an investment in our future. It's amazing when you actually look at things in terms of reincarnation, rebirth. That makes a lot of sense. Looking after people when they're old, when they're dying, and then just the last weeks of their life, it's investing. A lot of people think, no, what's the point? They're going to die soon anyway. You know, come on, bring it on. That's not very nice. And it's also, it's not an investment. So anyway, that's so if you have any problem with your kids, you now you know why. But anyway, instead of blaming, we call them like our teachers. It teaches us to be resilient, not to expect so much, and not to keep blaming them. Kids being kids. When I was visiting my brother many years ago, you know, his kids, you know, were maybe 12, 13, my nephew and niece. You know what they used to call me? Like the nephew and niece of a monk? They don't call me uncle, they call me Munkle. That's the name of a monk who has nephews and nieces, Munkle. So they were talking to their Munkle, and they started asking, what was our dad like, you know, when he was our age? And because I was there at the time, I was his younger brother, I told him all the bad things my brother did, their father. And they were so fascinated. Did our dad really do that? Did he really act like that? I said, yeah, he did that, because he tells us we shouldn't do that. And he did that, yeah. And then my brother came in the room, what are you teaching my kids? And he really scolded me. Because, you know, as a parent, you tell your children to do stuff which you probably did worse. And he said, I never did that. I said, but yes, you did. I was there, brother. So don't expect too much of your kids, because that's what you did. And so when we understand that what life can give us, we don't blame. We understand. We accept. We become so tolerant and mellow with wisdom when we understand more. We don't blame so much. And why do we spend so much time blaming politicians? Oh, come on. How long have you lived, and how many politicians have you seen? Haven't you discovered they are all the same? Dogs go woof woof, cats go meow, politicians lie. You know, that's what they do. Why? There's a reason for that. That's another talk. But, I'll tell you recently when I was in Thailand, just totally going off subject, that I don't know how many of you remember the former state member for Perth, John Hyde. He used to come here. He used to be a good friend, John Hyde. And I think he was, not this election, the election before, 3 years ago, I think the politician, Eleni Evangeline, or whatever her name was, she beat him in the election, so he lost his seat. And, you know, he used to come and help us out here whenever we needed anything, and then I saw him in Bangkok about 3 years ago. He came to say hello. He said, "Do you remember me?" I said, "I don't remember you. Who are you?" He said, "I'm John Hyde. I used to be the Member of Parliament." And I said, "Wow, you look so much younger." And he said, "Yeah, that," he told me, and this is so true, "once you lose your seat in Parliament, your age just goes down. The amount of stress which you have." So even Obama, you may have seen him when he lost the presidency of the United States, he looked like an old man. Have a look at him now, he probably looks young again. It's amazing just the stress, what it does to your body. But anyway, politicians are politicians, so don't expect so much. People say, why are politicians like that? Because they're representative of the people of Australia. It's true, isn't it? You get what you are. So, you know, how many times are you to spend the truth? White lies here, a little bit of not fitting in your taxes properly, and you expect your politicians, your representatives to be different. So don't blame them. You get what you deserve. Karma. So this is the last little story. Again, I think I told this somewhere else, so I think I'm safe on this one. The story about the prisoner up in Karnat? Good. He taught me about the law of karma. Because many, many years ago when I used to go to this prison, he came up to me after a talk which I give there and said, "Can I spend 5 minutes in private with you?" "Yes, sure." And he told me, he said that he was put in prison for a crime he didn't do. He was innocent. And he said, "I know that many prisoners in jail in Western Australia would say that." He said, "This is absolutely true." He said, "I did not do that robbery. I was set up. I didn't do it. I'm innocent." And I know many people have actually been like that. For those of you here, you may remember the case of Andrew Mallard. He came here a couple of times after he was released, but people recognized him, so, you know, he wanted just to disappear, so he eventually went over to England. He got interested in Buddhism because of our forgiveness. So anyway, this was another prisoner, and he said, "I didn't do that crime. I respect you, Ajahn Brahm. I would not lie to you." And as soon as he said that, I realized he was telling the truth. And I also knew how difficult it is if you are in prison to do anything for yourself. You don't have any money, you have only one telephone call a week if you're lucky. So I started thinking, how can I help this guy? And as I was thinking how I could help, who I could call when I got back to my monastery and maybe raise some funds, see a few lawyers, that's when he interrupted my thoughts. And he looked at me with this really cheeky smile. You know, he's maybe in his 40s or 50s. There was a prison series called Porridge. Yeah, I never seen that, but people told me what it was like, and it's probably like one of the old prisoners in that movie as well. And he said to me, he said, "Yeah, I didn't do that robbery. I was innocent. But," he said, "there's so many other robberies I committed where I wasn't caught. I guess it's fair." And that's the law of karma. Why do we blame just the one time we get put in prison for something we didn't do, when all the other times we didn't get caught? We don't blame that. Why is it we always get upset when we get caught by the speed camera, and we never get upset all those times we're speeding and we never get caught? So sometimes, instead of blaming life, sometimes it's something which is almost like fair. we get away with much stuff. But when we get caught, when things go wrong, we learn from it. We don't blame people. We don't blame life when a tragedy happens. We don't blame our partner when they make a mistake. We all make mistakes. I make mistakes, you make mistakes. So we don't try and control other people. We learn instead. And we learn to be more tolerant, more compassionate, more forgiving, instead of blaming others. Yeah, sure, when really serious stuff comes up, you know, we have to... I was called, like, prison system should be putting people in quarantine. Always, like, violence, even cheating, is like a sickness until it can be cured, but not punished. So don't blame people. Don't blame life. If you do, it is very much like having an itch on your bottom and scratching your head. Thank you very much. Very good. Okay. Before we have the questions, because I know some people leave, before you leave, can I just ask the people in the front here, can you just please turn around just for a photo shoot? And don't blame me. Just out of kindness, compassion. And please do it quickly. It's a wide-angle lens. And once the photo shoot is finished, then we can actually have the questions and answers. Yeah, can you come a bit closer in, those people on the side, just for a couple of seconds? Please, in the side, can you come in? Dimmy, come on, you're employed by us, so you'll get the sack if you don't follow orders. No, this is doing this as well. Yeah, no, that's our flag, yeah, from Mike's quarters. Okay. Only take a few seconds. If you want to be famous, spotted. Okay, yeah. You're upside down. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay, is that enough? One more, is one more. Okay. And remember, if you don't like it, just call it Ajahn camera. Okay, very good. So you can turn around now, we have the questions. Thank you so much for helping out. Okay, today we have from New York, from Victoria, Australia, and from Scotland. The Scottish one was probably about the joke about the Englishman, Scotsman. Two people, first of all from New York, two people separated after a long relationship. I tried for a year to get him back by being compassionate towards him. When I start to move on and he returns and I'm with someone else, is that bad karma for not accepting him then? Not at all, because you tried to be compassionate, you start to move on. Sometimes relationships are very difficult. Sometimes one person wants to leave, the other person doesn't. In this case, you try to reconcile, but then you moved on and then they wanted to come back again. It is just so complicated. But it's only bad karma. You have wrong intentions. You tried your very best. So don't blame yourself and don't blame the other person. Simply because this is what happens in life. Sometimes you do have a relationship. Some relationships last for a long, long time. You're very, very close. You put a lot of effort into it and it works. Sometimes people move apart. It's nature. They're not bad people. It's just what happens sometimes. So I know that because sometimes when there's marriage problems, relationship problems, people suffer so much they tend to actually to complain. It's his fault, it's her fault. Oh, it's our fault, but sometimes it's nobody's fault. It's impermanence. It's just things change. They have their use by day. So you can't do much about it. So what is really very nice when people just have a wonderful relationship together, and if it doesn't work out, they don't blame. What a wonderful time we've had together. Thank you for your love and your companionship and your friendship. Thank you so much. We understand that sometimes they last for a long time, sometimes they don't. And we are much more accepting of the fact that in our modern world, no, the modern world, even old world, sometimes that things last a long time, sometimes they don't last. It's nature. Sometimes the storms blow and they take young relationships. Sometimes old relationships, they go on for a long, 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 long time. You're very fortunate. But most of the time, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. From Victoria, please advise on how to stop blaming oneself for practicing non-attachment, having to love the tiger from a distance when being closer to said people or situations are destructive, and guilt arises due to confusion over the boundaries of compassion. Yeah, there's sometimes that in some people, if you get too close to them, that you get scratched. It was an old story of people having spikes, invisible spikes. I forget where I learned this story. It's a very beautiful image. Everyone has got spikes coming out of them, invisible spikes. Some people, their spikes are so long and so sharp. They come into this room and everyone feels uncomfortable. You get scratched, you feel, ugh. You don't want to be around such people. Most people have got average leg spikes. Yeah, you can be sitting next to them, it's fine. But you get too close and you get scratched. But some people have only got small amounts of spikes. Yeah, you know, you can be friendly to one another, but you get too close and, you know, you get scratched. You know, even in relationships, you know, your spikes are very, very withdrawn. But you get too close. And there are some people who've got no spikes at all. If you ever meet them, wow, they're amazing people. You feel so safe, they will never criticize you or harm you, no matter how close or stupid you get. And those people are amazing people. So, sometimes you're trying to, you know, love a person who's scratching you, and you want to come closer to them, and they're just asking for trouble. So that's why we say, love the tiger at a distance. You don't go patting the tiger. You know, you can love them sort of, you know they're up in the forest somewhere, and you know, keep the forest for you guys, but I'm not going to sort of come and just, you know, ask you, tiger, are you okay today? You look at a distance. And over the boundaries of compassion, remember that kindness, compassion goes to you as well as to others. That's a problem with people. They're compassionate to all other beings except themselves. If you put yourselves in the balance, kind to me and kind to others, it's all about not just other people, it's me as well, then you set boundaries. You count. Instead of always sacrificing yourself, then you get eaten by the tiger. Lastly, for Scotland, would you be so kind to prepare a Dharma talk about what is the best support I can give to my fiancé who has been diagnosed with the Alexander Fatal Disease? Well, I don't know, what is the Alexander Fatal Disease? Do you know what that is? Alexander Fatal Disease. Please have to let me know what Alexander Fatal Disease is, unless it could be a joke I'm not getting. The Alexander Fatal Disease, Gift Francie's been diagnosed. Look, she may have been diagnosed with a fatal disease, but what the doctor told me, he went to Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney for his medical school, and the head of the medical school, a very well-known professor, he was going to retire that year, and he welcomed all of the medical students to the hospital with these opening words. 50% of what we're going to teach you in the next 4 years is wrong. My problem, he said, is I don't know which 50% it is. Now, to me, that was a scientist. All science, including medicine, is work in progress. So he may be diagnosed as a fatal disease, which takes years and years and years to actually to kill somebody. I personally know many, many people who should have been dead years ago, but are still living. The old curly brown leaves still cling onto the tree. People, like I mentioned, when I talked about that having few spikes, I always remembered Ajahn Tate in northeast Thailand. He was the most spikeless monk I've ever noticed. So kind and so compassionate, you felt so safe in his presence. And he was the monk who, when I first went to Thailand in 1974, I think maybe, and he was a monk who had just left the Sirirat hospital. He'd been diagnosed with untreatable cancer, terminal, and he said, if I'm going to die, I might as well die in my monastery instead of dying in a hospital. So he went up to Udon province, and 23, 24 years later, he passed away. He's supposed to die in a couple of weeks. Brilliant monk. So sometimes you say diagnosed with a fatal disease, who knows? There's been too many anomalies, unexpected cases where fatal disease never really happened. And anyway, I've also been diagnosed with a terminal disease. I should make that announcement now. It's called life. Because one of my best definitions of the meaning of life. What is life anyway? Life is a sexually transmitted terminal disease. I like that. Very beautiful description of life. A sexually transmitted terminal disease. So all terminal. But I don't know exactly what the Alexander fatal disease actually is. But it doesn't matter. Give it a chance, I hope. If that's your fiancé, please, love her to bits. Care for her. Because the last story I told is at the funeral on Wednesday. It was Ajahn Chah, another Ajahn Chah simile. He used to hold up a glass, and he said, and this is to from Scotland, he said, can you see the crack in this glass? And I would look very carefully, and I said, I can't see any crack. And he said, because it's microscopic, but it's there, he said. It's a microscopic crack in this glass, because if I drop it, or if it falls over, it will break. It's a crack called fragility, impermanence. It will break one day. He said, because it's fragile, because it's got a terminal disease, this cup, this glass, that is why I have to care for it. If this was plastic, unbreakable, I wouldn't need to care. I could throw it all over the place. Because it's fragile, because it's terminal, that is why we care. If ever you think your relationship is permanent, unbreakable, then you will be heedless and you will not care for it. So the fact that your fiancé has got some terminal disease is just emphasizing how much you should care and love her. Just like yourself, you're cracked. One day that will open up. For you from Scotland, it's more obvious. So it doesn't mean you don't marry her and love her. It means you love her even more. You care for her more deeply. And you also realize, who knows who goes first? Because we're fragile, that's why we care. Okay. So, any questions from the floor before we finish off? Okay. And thank